from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in for Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, anthropologist Margaret Mead said it is utterly false and cruelly arbitrary to put all the play and learning into childhood, all the work into middle age, and all regrets into old age. Marcy Alberher joins us to talk about her Encore Career Handbook, designed to help you make the second half of your life more fun and meaningful. That's coming up on Forum right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Michael Krasny. This hour, are you staring down retirement? Maybe you're just a few years away. Maybe your company downsized and dumped you into the job market before you could cash in your benefits. These are scary times for baby boomers who aren't really old yet, but they're really done with the career that paid the bills for 25 years or so. Enter the Encore career. Now, we could be talking about a sudden, possibly irrational desire to hop on a bus to Hollywood, but no, we're talking about careers with meaning, with a public service element, careers that take into account what you learned during all that time leading up until now. And that's the focus of the Encore Career Handbook. And its author, Marcy Alberher, joins us in studio. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Rachel.
So let's talk first, I guess, about the issue that's on so many people's minds, especially if they're at the tail end of their first career, if you will, ageism. There seem to be two kinds. One, the kind that comes from employers, but the other seems to be social. We hear from everybody that older means slower, stuck behind the times, washed up. It's like the steady drumbeat of negativity.
Yeah, I guess I feel a little different than that, having spent the last couple of years interviewing hundreds of people in their 50s, 60s, 70s who are changing the world in all kinds of incredible ways and who refuse to be stopped by those stereotypes. So to me, the more we see people doing things that are unexpected at this life stage, the more we're going to dispel those stereotypes. And I think it's, when you mentioned there are stereotypes held by employers, there are social expectations. I think all of us, though, carry around those stereotypes. We even apply them to ourselves. Am I too old to learn something new? Will I be able to embrace the latest technology? Do young people speak a different language? So I think we have to catch ourselves first, because if we start reinforcing the stereotypes, how are we going to ever expect employers and others? You know, look who runs our government. We have a whole bunch of septuagenarians.
Well, there are a lot of people who would say that is not a good situation. You know, look at the approval ratings for
Congress.
I know,
but we look at someone like Hillary Clinton, who we all think has come into her prime. You know, so I think we're seeing a lot of role models for, you know, what that second and third act can look like. Look at Bill Gates, who people say will be most remembered for what he did in his Encore career in his post-Microsoft years.
That's a good point. For those 100 people that you talked to for the book, were they people who wanted to be in the job market again, or were they dumped into it?
So, by the way, hundreds of people, not even 100.
Okay.
The people that I interviewed for the book and who we're tracking in this Encore career movement come to it for all kinds of different reasons. You know, I call it the Encore moment. In the book, we talk about kind of six different ways you can arrive at your Encore moment. So, of course, one of them is the unexpected one. You hit the end of the line either through a layoff or, like so many people in the media industry that we know, your industry completely changes and you have to decide you're going to reinvent or you're going to stay in the game or you're going to go do something else. But people arrive for many, many different reasons. Sometimes they hit a is this all there is moment where you've been phoning it in and you just feel like there has to be more. I've talked to people who've had a crisis of conscience. They did one kind of work and said, you know, I just don't feel good about this. And there's still time left and I want to do something that matters. And then there are people who have a loss or some kind of trauma in their lives, and they decide that they're ready for a big change and life suddenly feels precious and they want to make sure that whatever they do, they're going to feel good about it.
I guess, yeah, you might experience a life-changing event or you might see it happen to a loved one and think, you know, this is the time I have to do something right now.
And so many people are spurred into an encore by a personal experience they had. I was here speaking at the Commonwealth Club last night, and the person who interviewed me, Isabel Doron, she's someone people might know from the local media here because she's a television broadcaster who recently announced her own retirement in her 60s to continue to lead the nonprofit that she started 14 years ago, which she's been running on the side. And it's a nonprofit called Latinas Contra Cancer, which helps Latina cancer survivors, which she started because she had a cancer diagnosis of her own, went through treatment and realized that she had so much information, but there are whole communities of people, women who had no access to the information that she had. And she started this nonprofit and did this on the side for 14 years while still in her main career. But that kind of personal experience that leads you to do something is very common.
We should mention that she's hosted Forum in the past, so some folks listening in might recall that.
That's kind of why I mentioned her.
You know, you were a lawyer before you became a columnist for the New York Times, before you became a writing coach and an author. What was it for you? What was one of the six reasons that turned you into a new person?
So I've had a few careers. I'm younger than the Encore population, so I look at this interest with an interest of a journalist and someone who is also kind of going to age into this myself. I'm getting closer to that age. But I had a few career reinventions over the years. But my first one, the one that made me leave the law, was kind of a crisis of conscience. I practiced corporate law for about 9 years, and I was working for a company that I didn't feel really proud of. I didn't feel so good about the work, and I felt like I had talents and abilities, and I was using them in a way that made me feel kind of icky. and the job was asking so much of me. I was working crazy hours. I was barely taking vacation, and I had one of those epiphanies that was really kind of gearing up for years, but it felt sudden, where I was called on a vacation on a beach in Rio, and my cell phone goes off, and my boss asked me if I would go home to work on something that had heated up while I was away. And I said no. And I also said, you know, not only would I not go home to continue to do work in a job that didn't matter to me, but it was a wake-up call that I need to leave that kind of work and do something that I thought had more value in the world. And I could have reinvented as a lawyer, and I could have found a way to do good as a lawyer. There are so much need for lawyers. But it was a good time to take stock and think, I stumbled into a field that wasn't really right for me. I'd always wanted to be a writer. I'd always been interested in journalism. And I did the hard work of figuring out how you go through a career change, and it took years. And I found mentors, and I went back to school and took a bunch of classes with people much younger than I was, and eventually I figured out how to do it.
And that's even though you had a sneaking suspicion, you had a direction already in mind. I find that interesting. I mean, a lot of people, they come to the end of the line, as you were talking earlier, and they don't have an idea. They don't really know what plan B is.
Right, which is why so much of the book is about helping people figure that part out. And you know, when this book was designed, and I work for an organization, Encore.org. I didn't write this book on my own completely. I had all this support because we've been tracking this Encore movement. And we wanted to help both people who knew what they wanted to do and needed help in getting there. But we also wanted to help the millions of people who have no idea what they wanted to do. And maybe the last time they gave that any thought was 20 years, 30 years ago. And you're a different person than you were when you made that first choice. And there might have been influences that sent you down a path. Maybe you were trying to please your parents. Maybe you were just thinking about how to pay the bills.
Maybe it was just the right answer at that time.
Right. And you know, what has happened in that period is you've changed and the world has changed. So we find that people often go back to something and there's a line, a through line, and you can understand it, but it may not on its surface look, you may be interested in something that has no outer connection to what you did before. But you have to let yourself dream a little and play a little and experiment to figure that out. So we created a set of exercises for this book that's kind of like what color is your parachute for the Encore years, which is about trying to look back at all your life experiences and try to glean from that what kind of things you lit you up and you want more of in your life. What kind of things you, even if you're good at them, you never want to do again.
Meetings.
For some people, it's managing lots of people. For some people, it's running a budget. For some people, you know, even people who've worked in social change their whole life want to change the world or do something with a positive social impact in a whole different way. And you could be burned out. All of us need to kind of give ourselves a rehab after a while. And this is your chance. This is a time of second and third chances. And I've seen people, you know, when I get back to those encore moments, one of them is the revisiting of a deferred dream. There's so many people who said, I always wanted to, you know, do something for, my country of origin. I wanted to kind of finish school. I wanted, you know, all these things that you now have time to do it.
Well, I wonder if you've come across people who maybe met resistance from a spouse or a partner. You want to do what?
Yes.
And the possibilities for income with that are what?
Right. So there's this classic, you know, I'm in my 60s and I want to, you know, go to the Peace Corps kind of thing. And, you know, that may not fly with your partner or your children or so, you know, if you have others in your life who you have to negotiate with, it's very important that you have some open communication about what you're thinking about, and that you involve people in your journey. I mean, I have talked to people who have done some pretty dramatic life shifts at this stage, there's one physician who I talked to who wanted to go to Africa and work on the HIV epidemic. And it was really important that he involve his wife and his kids in ways that they could also feel connected to the work.
Don't just dump it on your family.
Right. But that said, you need support in this. So it's really important not to go it alone. And your family may not be the best people to be your first line of support, which is why we're encouraging people to start Encore Transition Groups. And we have a free guide available on the book's website. It's on encore.org/handbook. You could download it. And it's a guide to working on your own transition with other people that you find in your community. You could do it with people who are, you know, from your church or from some organization you belong to in your book club. And those people can be your support team. It's very similar to kind of consciousness raising group, so that from the women's movement, where there's something big going on and you're not the only one dealing with it. So find people like you. You know, go to our social networking sites where there's a lot of people who are at this life stage trying to figure out a way to make a transition to something that has meaning and impact in the world. And you can be part of something bigger than yourself.
It raises the distinction, I suppose, between people who are planners and people who are leapers.
Yes.
Leaping might put you on a path to conflict with people who know you. But, you know, then again, there's something to be said sometimes for shaking things up and you know, charging out before you have all your ducks lined up in a row.
Yeah. So if you have some years to plan, ideally, you could be trying things out. You can volunteer. You can do what I like to call a pro bono consulting assignment, where you offer your services for 3 months to an organization you care about. There are great programs like the Taproot Foundation, where you could do consulting on teams to help nonprofits on various projects like redesigning a website or working on a marketing plan or using whatever your professional skills are. You could get involved in a board of an organization you care about. You could go travel to a place that is interesting to you that you want to learn more about. You could take courses. You could read. But there are people that just arrive at this moment and an opportunity suddenly seizes them and they're in it. And they could be in it for the next 10 or 20 years, or they could find, once they immerse, well, that helped them shape what they're thinking about and they learned something, but now they need a tweak. And it's like sailing. You tack a little in this direction and then the wind blows you in another direction. And you have to allow for that kind of it's not a straight line journey.
Well, let's talk now to somebody you're familiar with who's actually been on this journey, as we call it, Judy Townsend from Oakland.
Hi.
So what were you doing before and what are you doing now?
Well, what I do now is I sell mannequins for a living. And it's so funny because in my younger years, I would not have had the confidence to do something that's so unusual, where people look at me and they ask me, how do you do that or why do you do that? And they give me those kind of oddball stares. That's one of the things about being older and much more comfortable in yourself, more willing to take on certain risks. So most of the time I had spent my life working for Fortune 500 companies, and then I had a short stint at a .com. Never thought about being self-employed. I just had a passion for mannequins. And it was one of those things where I just kind of leaned into it. A chance opportunity ended up being my life calling.
How did people react when you said, I feel this driving need to go into mannequins?
They thought I was a little crazy, hence the name of my business, Mannequin Madness. I was just looking for a mannequin one day for an art project, and I saw someone was selling some mannequins on Craigslist. I was expecting to find one mannequin, and instead he had 50 mannequins, and he ran the only mannequin rental company in town and was leaving the state. So I just thought I was going to do this as a side hobby. Fortunately, I only had a week to make my decision because he was leaving town, or I probably would have talked myself out of it. So it started out as just a hobby. Then when my dot-com job ended after 9/11, I did a lot of soul searching. Plus, I was in my late 40s. I didn't think it was going to be easier for me to find another well-paying job in the dot-com industry. So I just thought I would give this a shot. And found out that a lot of retail stores throw mannequins in the trash when they close or remodel stores. So now we recycle them. So it gave me a bigger calling just simply selling mannequins. I'm also doing something that's helping the environment.
So, Marcy Elbaher, this is exactly an example of leaping because the moment is right. The stars align. The opportunity presents itself. And maybe it's something that was already in the back of her mind, but there it is.
And what I love about Judy's story is she didn't have to force herself. It happened in a whimsical way almost. I mean, she told the story about how she found this mannequin to work on this project in her garden, and it was a hobby first, right? And then she turned it into a business, and she recognized that it had this great social value. But what's interesting to me is Judy sits at the intersection of a really important trend here, too, which is the social entrepreneurship route, that many people at this age are thinking, I may not be able to get hired and I don't want to or I don't want to work for someone, but I want to marry some kind of social impact with the ability to make a living. And you see a lot of these socially oriented businesses cropping up. And especially here in the Bay Area, there's a lot of energy around that.
Well, Judy Townsend, I have another question for you, but first I want to call out to our listeners. If this sounds like you, if this sounds like somebody who might be you in 6 months or 2 years, call us at 866-733-6786 or email us at forum@kqed.org. Post on our Facebook page. Head to our website, kqed.org/forum. What's the twinkle in your eye that you're about to land on your family, on your friends? Yes, you didn't know it, but this is my new direction. 866-733-6786. So Judy Townsend, there you are with this opportunity. You've got a week to decide. Were you financially prepared to make this shift?
Well, once again, I was not planning to do this full time. I was financially okay because I was still working at my dot-com job. And then I had about 9 months into the business before my job went under. So I was already doing some exploring. I would have never thought I was ready to take the leap. But what's interesting, once I did take the leap, then all of a sudden, because once again, I had no experience with mannequins. I'd had a bad experience being an entrepreneur in my 30s, so I never thought I was going to be a business owner again. And it's just amazing that it's just given me a new spark because now I'm so excited about all the new things I have to learn about mannequins, about running a business, because I'm passionate about it. Before, my motivation was really more making a living. Now, certainly I want to make a living, but I really have a passion, as crazy as it is, for mannequins. So that drives me in a way that I didn't have a drive before.
Marcy Elbaher, I suppose this is a perfect example that you can transition while you're still in your job making that steady paycheck. But I also imagine that for a lot of people without the, you know, the store is going to close in a week, do you want it or not, prompt, a lot of people might still end up daydreaming for years thinking, yes, one of these days I'm going to create an actual game plan to stopping in this job I've learned to hate.
Well, I love Judy's method, the kind of what I call you do it on the side, which is the slash career. That's the last book I wrote was about slash careers, people who need many slashes to define what she's doing. So she was a corporate person slash fledgling entrepreneur. And usually what that slash arrangement does is it gives you some way to fund your new interest, your learning. So people slash while they go to school, they slash while they're doing those experiments we talked about. And often because people are at that window where you still need health insurance, you're too young for Medicare, what are you going to do until we know what Obamacare is going to look like? So we all have to figure out where's that going to come from. And often if you have a steady job, hanging on to it while you make your transition is very good financially, but it also helps you identity-wise because I find that when people are going through this transition, there is a shedding of an identity that you've had for many, many years. And for people at this life stage, that's complicated. What does it feel like to be new and a beginner at something and to be learning and maybe not to have the confidence at the beginning of and to – you know, it's what are you going to say when you meet every, I'm trying this new thing. I'm exploring this. So you have this thing that, you know is you and you're, and I did that when I left the law. I worked part-time for about 6 to 8 months. It was a way to have steady income, but also a way to have this area of my life that I knew I had competence in while I was learning some skills in a new area.
Well, we're already getting people on the phone. So let's give a call out now to Kate at on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, no.
I guess we don't have her quite yet. But, you know, you raise this point in the book. People have to come down off that feeling of being a previously important person.
A pip. Yeah.
A pip. Yeah. You know, it does sound kind of frightening. You know, people know you for a certain thing and maybe you've achieved a fair bit of status in your previous career and now you're launching into something entirely different.
Right. So, I mean, whenever I deal with people who have that pip issue, there is this humility that you need to adopt. You need to understand that as you enter some new worlds, you're not going to be the smartest person in the room anymore. And it's a really good time to work on your listening skills and to show that you're really eager to learn and that you have talents you're going to bring and be confident about those talents, but that you may need to learn new skills. You may need to learn a whole new language.
You have to be a
culture.
Newbie.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like we do have Kate on the Golden Gate Bridge. Kate, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. So tell us your story.
Well, when I was 50, I started a threshold choir. We sing at the bedsides of people who are dying, and it's given me tremendous amount of meaning, and I'm watching it give comfort to the people we sing for and shared meaning to choir members all around the world.
And it sounds wonderful. Was it something that you had been thinking about for years, or was there a sudden inspiration, maybe an experience you had?
I had an experience of singing for a friend who was dying 10 years before I started the choir. So I thought about it and gained some skills and was able to start it in the year 2000.
Wow. And when you started it, how did you go about it? Had you raised money for it? Had you connected with a community?
I had not raised money, but I had connected with lots of singers and started small and had modest but strong goals and watched cooperation on every level and watched it grow tremendously. There are 110 choirs around the world and
wow.
Thousands of singers singing at bedsides.
And this is over the course of how many years?
13 years.
13 years. And so I suppose if you could go back in time to yourself 13 years ago, you'd say all systems go?
Oh, absolutely. I've thrown everything that I am, have learned, people I've known, everything has pointed to this, and I've reconnected with skills that I've gained all throughout my life. They're all being pulled and used in this work.
Well, what I love about Kate's story is that both she's created this thing, but she's also created an outlet for these other people to get involved in this kind of work also. So she's created encore opportunities for other people who may not want to be a founder. So she obviously has what it takes to pull together an organization with a structure like this. And she's created this great opportunity for others.
We're talking with Marcy Albaher about the Encore Career Handbook. What do you want to do with the rest of your life? How has your experience made you capable of changing the world for the better? Call us at 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. We're taking your comments and questions. Those on the phone, hang on. We'll be back in a moment. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio, and I'm Rachel Miro, in for Michael Krasny. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Michael Krasny. We're talking with Marcy Albaher about the Encore Career Handbook, about practical ways to retool your life, to really reconsider what it is you want to do with the next 10, 20, 30, maybe even 40, 50 years of your life. And we have been getting so many phone calls. Let's go straight to them. We've got Lisa in Alameda.
Oh, hello there. Good morning.
Good morning. So what's your story?
My story, I have worked in bank operations for the last 27 years since I was 18 years old. And at one point I was an assistant vice president for a bank, and now I'm a corporate officer for another bank. And I decided that I don't want to sit behind a desk for the next 20 years. So in less than 3 weeks, I will begin flight attendant training.
Wow. What inspired this?
In 1986, TWA was hiring, but there was a strike, and I decided I didn't want to cross the picket line. And also, the training is unpaid, which is an unfortunate reality. Mm. And so I was 19, and that idea I wanted to be paid. So I decided not to pursue it at that time, but it never left me. It never left me. So here I am, fast forward 27 years later, and I was selected to attend, unpaid, and I am doing it.
Congratulations. So is it everything you had hoped it would be, granted that this is just the training phase?
Yeah, I mean, so far I really can't comment on that too much because, you know, I really don't have anything to really gauge at this point in time. But, you know, I had to fly to the interview, and that was stressful because, you know, I literally left my job at 1:30 p.m. and I drove to the airport, and I've never done an interview on the road before. And there was a time change and, you know, checking into a hotel and then getting myself to the interview site the next morning. I mean, there was a stressful element to that. But, you know, I participated in the interview, and then I got a call back to do the medical, and here I am.
And here you are. I take it you're excited.
I'm super excited.
And, you know, I guess, Marcy Albuquer, in some ways it takes being willing to break out of your routine, out of your habit, out of your sense of what it is you think you're capable of doing.
Yeah, I mean, and what the caller said, that really struck me, two things. One is she had a deferred dream, right? She revisited something that was important to her when she was young and realized she still had time left to do that. But the other thing she said that is so common in stories I hear is she wanted to get away from a desk. I mean, we talk to people who are becoming park rangers in national parks, who are doing some kind of work that gets them out of the physical environment they don't want to be in anymore. I always say that my encore is going to take me away from a computer because I stare at a screen all day long. And so I think it's really important to listen to those cues you're getting.
So Lisa, what was it about the office environment that finally was the last straw for you?
Oh, gosh. You know, the emails. It's just the emails are just incessant. And it's just too much. They just come in too frequently. I can't keep up with them. I mean, that seems like a small thing, but, you know, day in and day out. And all sorts of compliance, the regulations are just increasing more and more, and it's just so much to keep up with. I love my job. I have worked for a great company. I'm leaving on a high note, you know, which is awesome. Yeah.
Well, best of luck, Lisa. Judy Townsend, as you're listening to this, does this sound like a part of what prompted you to make the shift?
Absolutely. I mean, there is nothing about being motivated by your passion. It allows you to do things that you didn't think possible. If I thought I had to go back to school for some other kind of purpose right now, I probably would not be that excited about it. But the fact now that I find a way to learn in my own way, whether it's webinars or, you know, signing up for different kind of workshops, but about something that I'm excited about. even aspects of my job that aren't as much fun. Like, I don't really like the accounting aspect of my job, but that's still something I need to learn to fuel my other passion, which is to be able to grow my mannequin business.
Well, let's turn now, thank you, Lisa, to Noah in San Francisco.
Hi, I'm very excited to be speaking with you. I'm a business owner. I have a mobile art gallery at the moment. One of the ways that I market myself is I go door to door, and I've been doing it for about 10 years, and it's been pretty exhausting. And right now I'm in a transition. I'm trying to understand what I'm good at, what is the next thing that I want to do, and how do I get there? Something that is very clear for me is that I'm good with people, and I don't want to go to school. I don't want to get myself into debt and, spend a lot of time doing that. But I'm really in a little bit of a fog of making a transition. It's really, really scary. Do you have any good suggestions for me?
Hi, Noah. Yeah, I think one of the things you should think about is give yourself some kind of low-risk experiments, ways that you could try some stuff out. So you said you're good with people. You're obviously passionate about art. I don't know what other things come up, but there are some exercises in the book, and you can brainstorm with friends. Ask some people, what are your best qualities? When do you seem happiest? I'm just throwing these out. When you're traveling, when you're around children, when you're doing something creative, kind of come up with those kinds of things. And then pull some people together and try to figure out an experiment where you could put yourself in that environment in some way. Find a nonprofit in your community that's doing something around those things you just said. And start to put yourself in new places and track your reactions when you do those experiences. So if you go for an afternoon to volunteer in an arts and crafts center for kids, how did you feel afterwards? What were the things you liked? What were the things you didn't like? And then craft your next experiment based off that. So there's a process you could take yourself through that will help you hone your ideas a little. And talk to people. Tell people what you're interested in. If you meet someone who's doing something that intrigues you, ask them if you can buy them a cup of coffee to learn more.
It's almost as if you're learning what it is you like.
We have to practice those skills. There's an exercise I love in the book called Finding Your Attraction Signal. And for many of us, it's like that compass has gone away. Like, we don't even remember what
we've stopped asking whether we're happy.
So when you do that exercise, it's all about identifying, what does your body feel like? What does it feel like in your brain when you're in the state of doing something that you really, really like? And start seeing if you can find other things that make you feel like that. It's this very weird way to start retraining yourself, but it's kind of fun to play with that.
Noah, does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. You also talked before about reinventing yourself, and I feel like I'm going to leave the art world and I'm going to go into something different. And that's a big transition, but I have a feeling I need to reinvent myself. But how do you deal with the fear of losing your income? That's a big deal for me. How do you do that?
Fear? Did you say fear of losing income?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes. So I think one of the best ways to deal with it is to figure out some way to solve the income problem while you're reinventing. So it might be that, if you're good at your business and you know what to do, is there some way you could scale it down that still provides you enough income to give yourself a cushion while you work on the new thing? It's, again, my slash model. Like, I really encourage people to figure out the money piece first a little bit so that you can free up your worry gene, so that doesn't come into play. But the other kind of fear that people have is, the fear of failure. And what's interesting at this life stage is people find that there's a different kind of fear that comes even more strongly into play, which is, what if I don't try? What if I don't try to shake it up and see what else is in me?
And that's what I agree to. If you don't try, it's even harder than putting it out there and then retooling yourself.
Exactly. And let yourself make some mistakes. Know that the first things you try aren't going to be it, but they're going to teach you something.
It's okay to fail, in other words. It does sound like something straight out of What Color Is Your Parachute?
Right. It's okay to fail, but those failures are going to take you somewhere. So you're going to learn something.
Well, thank you so much, Noah, for that question. Let's move on now to Deep in Marin.
Hi.
Hi. So tell us your story.
So I used to work for a really large software company up in Seattle, which you probably guess what that is. And I've been in this career, and I've worked in startups and for close to 20 years. And just this last year, I dropped all of that and started a flight school in Marin.
A flight school?
Yeah. And I'm about, you know, I'm 47, not quite probably the age that you are talking about, but I had probably a different reason. I was very high performing in the job, but I didn't love it like I love flying and airplanes. And that meant that I probably would not be what I call world class. You know, I would never be on, you know, the person who's passionate about what they do and think about it all the time. And of course, because they do that, they do more and they do. Whereas I used to take time away from my job to go fly, and I believe I can be, you know, really impact the fun flying, which is, I'm not an airline pilot or I'm not, but I saw a lot of passionate people there, and I believe I can really, really, you know, make an impact there. And,
what was it, Deep, that made you decide to make this shift?
So there was a couple of reasons. One, I was, you know, I was already a little bit unhappy about how I was not as committed to what I was doing. And the second thing was my dad, who was also as a fighter pilot in the Indian Air Force, suddenly passed away. He was healthy, and you know, there was no warning, and that really shook me in a way. And it also said, life's too short. You know, you never know, and you just got to do what you love. So, of course, I didn't do the leap. Most people think it's a leap, but I've been in startups. I know business. I actually made a business plan. I talked that over with my wife, who was amazingly supportive. I decided. I mean, I took all the change all at once. I had a son who was born. I'd moved, and I. You know, started a new business all at once.
How did you get over the fear of financial insecurity leaving a company like the one you just left?
I don't think I have got over it yet, but you know, I look at it as quality of life, right? If you're unhappy and you have money, I don't know if that's really you know, something that you should do. It's not to say that I'm being, you know, irresponsible about my finances. We decided, both my wife and I work in a high demand, reasonably well paying industry, and my wife Amy is supporting me, and she's, you know, she got a job. So we'll look at it. We'll be responsible about it. But I'm confident that, you know, if you do the right thing and you love it, you'll change. And I learned part of that in my previous career. So that's what. I don't know if you, but like I said, you know, it may not turn out to be a financial success, and we'll deal with it when that happens.
Judy Townsend, were you surprised, horrified by the change in your financial situation when you made the shift from, you know, a desk job that was relatively well paying to your own business?
Absolutely, and I didn't really consider myself a high risk kind of person. And as I mentioned, I had a business that had failed before. But it's sort of like a muscle that you developed. I mean, certainly there are some days that I miss not having a steady paycheck, but those are far and few between. I just found ways to be resourceful, as well as because I feel so much more fulfilled. A lot of times I was spending money on things just because I was not fulfilled. So I would spend more money, you know, shopping or doing a lot of entertaining. And there's a different fulfillment that I have right now, so I find that I've adjusted accordingly.
Well, Judy Townsend, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Love Marcy. Love the book. Referred it to several of my friends who are also in transition, and they found it extremely helpful.
Terrific. Judy Townsend is the owner of Mannequin Madness in Oakland for all of your mannequin needs. One listener writes in on forum's website, older people have something young people have, and it's much more valuable than knowing the latest tech application. It's called judgment and perspective, and unless you've experienced a lot of life, it's hard to beat. I don't know if it's entirely true that no young people have it, but it is true that you do gain judgment with experience.
Yeah, I'm so glad this has come up. So the other thing that older people have is wisdom and life experience. And what we are finding is that there are some places in the world and in the workplace where those skills are really, really in high demand and needed. So we find that some of the most common Encore careers are things that have to do with counseling and where perspective comes in really handy. Every time I talk to someone who's a counselor of any kind or a wellness coach or a therapist, they often say, you know, it's one area where people will say, I'd rather go to someone who's lived for a while than for someone who's just figuring it out themselves. So we see a lot of fields where there's a reason that so many mid and late lifers going into the ministry. You know, there are these fields where we can really use people who have had life experience and have that perspective to share. So I'm glad that has come up. And it also makes me think about, you know, we need a paradigm shift here. We need to think about how can we best use the talents of all the people in the world? Now, we're talking a lot about baby boomers and people who are nearing retirement now, but this just isn't an issue that's going to face this generation. It's an issue that young people should be really interested in, not just for their parents and their grandparents, because they're going to grow into it too. Now, this whole idea that we used to work for 30 years and then kind of have an endless leisure, that model is broken. And to sustain ourselves as a culture, we're going to need to know what the later stages of work look like so that we can all grow into them and that we can create institutions that support them, which right now we don't have. I mean, we're talking to people who have figured out their way, but they're do-it-yourselfers right now. They're the pioneers, and our organization and others are trying to figure out how can we create policies and get institutions to make this more normal so that we have more pathways for people who want to have Encore careers and more ways to help them get there.
You know, as you're saying this, I'm thinking we're talking to a lot of people who have clearly made a sharp left turn, gone into a completely different, you know, from banking to flight attendant, you know, from perhaps software engineering all the way, you know, flight seems to be a theme here.
Yeah, exactly.
But another theme you really see with a lot of people who've made a second career choice is it's something that bounces off their first career.
Completely.
Maybe they're a consultant. Maybe there was something they saw, a need that was unmet in the way that they saw their business run in that first career. And so it's really not that much of a leap.
Right. So one common thing I see is this people who go from like on the ground to 10,000 feet or the other direction. So to stay with flight if you want. But so, you know, a teacher who's taught for 30 years and then says, I want to go into education policy reform because I know what kids need to learn. Or we see, you know, one guy in the book I love was a parole officer who a lot of his Encore work was around alternative justice methods. Like, how do we really best deal with our incarceration system? But then we have some of these people who use the exact same skills in a new setting. So we have a whole lot of corporate people who are really talented in marketing or finance or business development who do a program like our Encore Fellowship program, and they want to translate those skills to a new culture, to the nonprofit sector or the social sector, and they want to work in a nonprofit as a development person doing fundraising or leading a nonprofit, and they just need to learn that new culture, but they have the skills already.
They already have the skills. And sometimes it's a matter of determining which of your skills are transferable to something else. Let's turn again to the phones. We've got Rosemary in Los Altos. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi there. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Fabulous.
So I love this topic because it totally relates to me. And sometimes I listen and I can't relate directly to what's happening. It's just informative. But I was a long-time technology employee, 25 years in tech marketing, from startups to the biggest of the big. And when I was 38, I had my son. And I took 10 years off because I was a late mother. And when it was time to go back to work, I could not imagine going back into the office environment. And so I as I was resisting that, but thinking about it and planning to go back into the work environment, I was told about a little business that had opened in San Francisco, and it was something that I had enjoyed as a professional woman for many years, and that was getting my own hair blown dry when I traveled. And other countries have this this concept of blow-dry bars. They have for decades because, especially in Latin America and Middle Eastern and European countries, lots of thick, long hair, the beauty ideal is different. And so I went to have the service, and I loved the service, but I hated their concept. And I don't want to, speak badly of anyone, but it was just very sexual. I was a 50-year-old woman, and I was like, no, this is not, I'm really a feminist at heart. I spent years working on feminist issues. And so I thought this is something I could do, and I could identify it to the demographics that I live in, which is the suburbs. And so I opened Halo Blow Dry Bar 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. We have 3 locations now. And it allowed me to really fulfill my passion for working on women's issues. I employ 60 women. I provide health care. We have a great work environment. We have amazing customers. And it's like my own little social good within a business. It's been extremely fulfilling.
Marcy Albaher, it sounds here like Rosemary's story. We're all consumers. We all know what could be done better, or we could see a tweak that would take something to the next level or meet another need. And it sounds like this is what Rosemary's done.
Yeah, the other thing that I see with Rosemary's story that I saw so much as I've been traveling around the country is that we have this enormous number of women who have really good skills, who left the paid workforce to raise their kids. And then they're coming back and they're hitting 50. So many of my peers are in this boat, and they're coming back, and they have all these skills to use. And in those years, they've probably been keeping their community running. They've been running the schools. They've been dealing with all kinds of caregiving issues. And they have all these skills that are needed in the world. And that is another talent force that we want to make sure not to lose. And we want to make sure that there are support systems for women who want to, for women or any parents who have taken off that time to do the valuable work of raising children. And we want to make sure that we've got the right on-ramps to help them get back to work and their communities and to, you know, to create businesses that are needed and to work on social programs that are needed. So she's not alone. She's a very, a big demographic that we're going to be seeing.
But this raises two questions for me. One, and we were seeing a lot of people mention this on Facebook, folks asking how you deal with something that's not well paying. I mean, in Rosemary's case, you've been very successful there. But there are, it's the nightmare scenario. You're bagging groceries for your local retailer because people don't respect what you did at home raising 3 children, which, takes terrific time management and people management skills, or they don't respect the work that you did before you went into motherhood. It's not always a financial choice that seems acceptable to pick a job that doesn't pay well.
Well, I think what you're heading at is interesting to me is when I said, we need more ways to help women who've made that choice or any parent who's made the choice to get back into the paid workforce. And often what's most important is getting some new skills because the work world has changed dramatically since the last time you worked for people in that situation. And often you can do that without investing in an arm and a leg. You could go to a course at your community college. As Judy said, there's so much happening now on webinars and in online learning that can be reasonable. But you need sometimes having a shiny new credential is very important. I mean, I was talking to a friend who got an MBA 15 years ago who said, it was really interesting to get an MBA 15 years ago. And she remembers working on a business plan where it was about a travel company with an 800 number. And she said, well, how useful is that today? She said, when you go back to school and you're going for a new credential, what's very interesting is you're then very immersed in what are the issues today. If you went to business school today, you'd be learning a lot about social entrepreneurship, which is the hot new trend. And you'd find that going back to school puts you in touch with what the issues of the day are, what skills you need, what tools you need to be familiar with. And if you're going to be working for another 20 or 30 years, it might really pay to invest in yourself. That can be the biggest investment decision you make.
But now we're also talking to a lot of people who have become their own employer. They started a business. Maybe they had enough in the kitty to finance that, or maybe it's something they were able to develop over time while they're working in the old job. you know, Chauncey on Facebook asks, I'm 53 and I've been trying to re-enter the job market for 3 years, volunteered at high levels for several organizations. This sounds like Chauncey has a lot of job skills that are valuable, but that work experience doesn't seem to count with employers.
Well, that is what one of the reasons why so many people over 50 are starting their own businesses. We've done some research on this, and we found that, you know, 1 in 4 people over 50 are interested in starting a business or a nonprofit that's going to have some kind of benefit to their community. So Chauncey is not alone, but a lot of people are turning to that, not necessarily because it's their dream, but because they're having a really tough time in the job market. So you know, it's one of those make lemon out of lemonades, and we're finding a lot of accidental entrepreneurs and people like Judy who didn't think they necessarily be drawn to entrepreneurship, and then when it's about something they really care about, suddenly they figure out how to raise money and they figure out how to leverage their network to make it happen. So again, we'd like to see a lot more support for people in Chauncey's situation.
Rosemary, did you consider working for somebody else before you set upon the idea of Halo Blow Dry Bars?
I did, and I had a lot of connections. You know, one of the things about living in the Silicon Valley is that if you've worked for a long time in technology, it's an extremely good network to belong to. But the specter of going back into working in that environment, which is very intense, as your software engineer before Deep mentioned, is very intense, it's very demanding, and if I was going to work that hard, I wanted it to have a larger purpose. I didn't want to just participate in the workforce anymore. I think that that was a big driver for me. I also, frankly, and this is really honest, I was fearful that my own skill set had become out of date, and that, you know, during the 10 years that I was raising my son, that I had lost contact really with social networking and with the social aspect of marketing in particular, which is so important in the technology industry today. And so I've actually used my business to rehone those skills. I could go back into the industry now if I wanted to, because I know everything about those new marketing technologies. But I was thinking as I was listening that I already can imagine what my next transition is going to be now. It's given me the courage to imagine myself doing many other things. You know, I imagine myself teaching after my son graduates.
Rosemary, we're going to have to leave it there. Congratulations on your success. We've been talking with Marcy Alberher about the Encore Career Handbook. Form is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and the executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Rachel Miro, in for Michael Krasny, and this is Forum on KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.